Welcome to the I Speak FSBO podcast, where we pull back the curtain from the real estate industry and expose everything they don't want you to know. We share tips, tricks, myths, and truths to fight against outdated real estate traditions so you can sell your home for top dollar without having to pay a dime in commission or sacrifice your time. It's time for homeowners to take back the power and break up the monopoly. This is the I Speak FSBO podcast, and this is your host, Josh Knox.
Hey everybody, it's Josh. Welcome to the I Speak FSBO podcast and to this episode. Today I wanted to talk to you about myths and facts. So truth and fiction, right? There is a lot out there. In fact, if you do a Google search on for sale by owner or how to complete a for sale by owner, most of the information that you're going to find is leaning heavily towards you should never do this, you're going to make a massive mistake. This particular article I'm looking at says it's a terrible idea, and then they give all these reasons why it's a terrible idea. So I thought it would be fun to walk through the article and tell you what is fact and what is fiction from this. So let's get started. So the number one thing they say here in their list, and these are just in order in terms of one through whatever that they talk about. I don't think it's necessarily in terms of this is the biggest thing that you could deal with as a for sale owner. Okay, so having said that, let's get started. One of the things they say here is scams happen. That's true. Scams do happen. What they're trying to say here is that the buyer and the seller could get scammed out of money, such as earnest money or some type of deposit or some type of fake party in the transaction. So as I go through this, I'm going to tell you whether or not it's fact or fiction, like I said, but I'm also going to tell you the fiction part of it. And that has to do with how to get around, how to work through the fact part of it, I guess I should say, is a better way to say it. So in this case, this is scams happen. That is very true. That is a fact. People are always scamming other people. It's not just something that's happening in real estate. You see it all the time. I mean, you may have recently seen an email from Nigeria or Kenya or whatever. So scams do happen. That's a fact. The fiction is that you would absolutely be trapped by this if you're a for sale by owner. And so the example they give here is if somebody paid earnest money. Well, why would you ever give somebody earnest money if you don't have a contract in place? So the way that you get around this, one, as a seller, is to see verified funds after a contract has been signed. Now, you would never sign a contract unless you verified the buyer in the first place. And I talk about that in a different podcast episode. So if you feel like somebody's trying to scam you, if it feels like it's too good to be true, it probably is, and you just need to do a little due diligence. So in the case of a buyer offering you, let's say, an exorbitant amount of earnest money should be anywhere from 1% to 3% of the sales price. So this is how you get through it. One, you want to see a contract from a buyer. Two, you want to see the buyer's pre-approval letter, so that you can call the buyer's lender and verify they're a legitimate buyer, right? Check out the lender, check out their brokerage, because the lender's probably going to have a brokerage, or maybe they're a bank or a credit union. But call them up and check them out. Ask them a series of questions on whether or not the buyer is a good buyer, whether or not the buyer actually has a down payment, so on and so forth. And then you can determine whether or not they're a legitimate buyer. Most people who are trying to scam people will only go through one step to get a scam across. They're not going to go through multiple steps. So just do your due diligence and make a couple of phone calls and you'll find out. If you're a buyer and you're willing to give earnest money on a house, don't do so without a contract. I mean, if you're willing to buy a property, if it's legitimately listed for sale and it happens to be a for sale by owner, put a contract out there. Tell them what you're willing to offer them. Tell them what the offer is contingent upon: inspections, appraisals, financing, right? All that kind of stuff. And don't deposit money with a seller directly. You should deposit it with a real estate brokerage who has a real estate trust account, or a real estate attorney, or a title company, or an escrow company. Never give it directly to the seller. That's how you're going to get around getting scammed out of that money. Okay. Another one. Liability is all on the seller. And this has to do with errors and omissions insurance. And it talks about a specific type of flooring. I'm going to give you a different example. First of all, if you're a buyer doing an inspection on a property, you're going to hire an inspector. It's just part of your due diligence. You're going to spend a couple $100 to hire an inspector. And part of that due diligence is to make sure that what the seller has claimed in the listing is true and accurate. So as a seller, you want to make sure you give true and accurate information on the property. If you know anything about the property that somebody may not know, just at glancing, it's still your obligation to disclose that information. And don't think just because an agent is involved that somebody wouldn't neglect putting information down. That's why agents will go into listings, and when a seller says, "What should I disclose?" the agent says, or should say to the seller, "You have to disclose everything. Everything that you know to be true and accurate about the property must be disclosed." If you thought that the roof once had a leak, even though it didn't leak for you, let's say you bought it from somebody who it had a leak for, you knew that it had a leak, you knew that it was repaired, right? You could say that to a person because you know that to be true and accurate. You knew there was a leak in the past, not when you owned it, and therefore it has never been a problem, and you can even point it out when and where it was and how somebody else dealt with it. If you don't know that, you don't have to disclose it, right? You didn't know that to be true and accurate about the property. But anything you know to be true and accurate about the property has to be disclosed. And then it's on the buyer's side for them to verify that information. One of the most common ones is the square footage of the house and the number of bedrooms and bathrooms that are claimed. Oftentimes, people will claim bedrooms that don't qualify as a bedroom, meaning they don't have a closet or they don't have a window, or they're not together, right? So if a room just has a window and no closet, it's not a bedroom. It's just a room, and you can't call that a bedroom. So these are the most common things that happen, and that liability is on the seller, but there is some onus on the buyer to verify that information. And I've seen it, I can't tell you how many times, where I've gone to show a property to a client and it says it has X number of bedrooms, and we find out that it's missing bedrooms because they tried to claim certain rooms were bedrooms. So in this particular article, they're talking about a specific type of floor. Okay, so if it's a tile floor or vinyl floor or hardwood floor or wood veneer floor, disclose what you know to be true and accurate about it. And it's up to the buyer to then verify that information. If you believe a floor is actually hardwood, if you actually believe that because you weren't the one that had it installed and the previous owner said that to you, right? Or the guy selling you the product told you it was an actual hardwood floor, but he lied to you and it's actually a wood veneer, then you're just going to disclose what you know about the property. If the buyer finds something different, then you have to come back to the negotiation table and talk about how you're going to work through that, okay? That's how you're going to get around, not get around, that's how you're going to work through that particular challenge. Again, I'm going to just say this right now, and I've only talked about two of these things. These articles sometimes are written so, I mean, they're funny to me because they're trying to be so one-sided as to the fact that people don't have a brain. Honestly, they're saying that homeowners can't think for themselves, that they must have somebody else there to think for them. And that's just not the case, right? If you're listening to this podcast, you know that you can do things. You know you can put together a project, right? I'm sure you handle more complex stuff often in your daily life at work than you do a home sale. It's just being educated on the things that you need to do when you go through the process, which is, of course, what this podcast is about. Okay, another thing. Paperwork is daunting. It can be if you don't. That's a truth. But any type of paperwork is daunting. And I'm here to tell you that your cell phone contract and your cable or your satellite contract is way more daunting. Look at a standard credit card contract, way more daunting than real estate paperwork. Real estate paperwork typically will consist of a sales contract, property disclosures, any other kind of disclosures, such as lead paint stuff. Anybody can Google search what paperwork is required in their state to sell their property. And I've talked about this on a different podcast, so just look through the episodes and you can find out where to find this information. But a simple Google search will turn this stuff over. It has to be out there for everybody to do it. Don't assume that a real estate agent knows everything there is to know about the paperwork. And if you read through a sales contract, most sales contracts are maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 pages. Sometimes they're 9 pages. I talk about the common contract language in a different podcast episode. It's just not that daunting if you'll read through it. And it's most of it is written in plain English. And so, you know, when people say there's not a one size fits all contract, there is. That's why State Board of Real Estate's boards of realtors in each individual state have state-specific contracts. That is a one-size-fit-all contract. Most real estate agents use them. They're called fill-in-the-blank contracts, okay? And if you ever have a question as to whether or not the contract's valid, you can ask your title company. They'll tell you if it's valid. Now, the title company is not going to give you advice on whether or not it is a good contract for you. Only you can determine the timing and the price if all that stuff works for you, okay? But the title company can't tell you whether or not it's a valid contract, whether or not all the signatures and initials are in the right place, whether it's binding, meaning everybody in the transaction has all the proper paperwork. But the fact that they say that it's daunting is, I believe, a bit ridiculous, to be quite honest. So that's another one. Okay, sellers. This one's saying sellers can get stuck in a bad deal. So can a buyer. You have to, when you read over a contract, you have to understand what you're getting yourself into, and that is to sell your house. So, example, you list your house for sale, a buyer walks through it, they like it, okay? If you did your due diligence on getting a price together, right, you either went out and did the research, and it's becoming easier and easier for sellers who want to do this on their own to do their own research. But it's becoming easier and easier to do it. If you go out and you do the right price research and put the right price on it, and you're getting people to look through the house, right, then you're probably getting a good deal. That's just what a real estate agent would do. They're going to go through the data. They're going to look at it. They're going to analyze it. They're going to look at comparables that already sold. They're going to look at comparables that are on the market right now, which is your competition. And they're going to take that stuff into account. If you've done the same thing, then you're going to find out a good price. And how could you get stuck in a bad deal that way, right? So you have to just look through the contracts when you're looking over them and make sure that the pricing and the timing and all that stuff works for both parties. Simple conversations will get this stuff weeded out, and then everybody can sign and have a good deal. The next one says, for sale by owner, sell for less. And they actually refer to a 2015 study done by, guess who, the National Association of Realtors. So who do you think that study was? If it's commissioned by them, what do you think they want to find? Of course they want to find that for sale owners sell for less money. What they won't tell you in that report, so this is a fiction, FSBO sell for less. This is absolutely fiction. In some cases, will they? Absolutely. Have I seen properties sell for less because an agent did a poor job? Yep, I've talked about it on different podcasts. In fact, I know two separate buyers where the seller did such a poor job. The buyers got $50,000. The selling agent did such a poor job. The buyers got $50,000 off the ask price of the property. So don't let anybody tell you that FSBOs sell for less. They have just as many problems as agents deal with if an agent doesn't know what they're doing, which again is why we have this podcast. We tell you all the steps you need to take in the right order in order to get your property sold for the maximum amount of money. So again, this study was done in 2015. I've read over it a number of times. The reality is there was another study done a few years before it, and it actually showed that the sales price between for sale by owners and properties listed by agents was less than 1% difference. So, and the data set So the number of people that submitted information for this NAR study was only about 7,000 people, and the data set for the one that showed that FSBOs don't actually sell for less, or there's about a 1% difference, was twice as many. And the data set, so it was around, it was actually closer to 15,000. So the data set for the NAR study was about 7,000 properties. And I'll tell you right now that it was a study done that included mobile homes, vacant pieces of land. It included everything they can include, and it was 7,000 people, a little over 7,000 across the entire U.S., which sells roughly 5 to 5.5 million homes every year. That's how many homes are actually sold in the U.S. every year. So the data set is not even, what, 1%? It's like less than a half of a percent or something like that. And then the data set for the one that showed that the FSBOs actually sell for right around the same price or maybe plus or minus 1% was just in one state and had twice as many data points in it. So don't let real estate agents fool you into believing that you're going to sell for less. If you go out and you do your due diligence, you price that property according to what the market is telling you it's worth, then you're going to sell it for the top end. And the reality is because you're not having to use a real estate agent, you're going to put more money in your pocket. It's just how it works out. In fact, I'll tell you really quickly, and you can listen again on a different podcast, but the one where the homeowner saved $41,000, had they sold for the 600, I just rounded it up. So he said he listed for 690, sold it for 675. Had he listed it for, let's say, even 700 with an agent, he still would have had to pay $42,000 in commissions. So take the 700, right? $699,900, right? Let's just round it up to 700,000. Take that. If he had to pay two agents, a selling agent and a buyer's agent, then he would have paid $42,000 in commissions. In this case, he sold for $675,000, so $25,000 off that top-end price, and an agent would probably tell you they could get that, okay? But $25,000 is not $42,000, so you can see where I'm going with this. Had he sold at $700,000, then he would have paid $42,000 in commissions, and that gives you $658,000. Without commissions, he got $675,000. So he had a few closing costs, right? Title insurance, so on and so forth, because he was also able to sell without a buyer's agent. So he still put more money in his pocket than he would have had he sold at the top end of the market with an agent. So again, FSBOs sell for less. That's a bunch of garbage, in my opinion. I've seen too much information to say it otherwise. Okay, FSBOs spend more time on the market. This one actually has some truth to it. They can spend a couple more weeks on the market, but if you take into account that you're saving all that commission, two more weeks for you shouldn't kill you. And typically, for sale by owners, sometimes we'll price a little bit high. They tend to get a little bit more emotional about their price tag. And if they'll just follow the steps that I outlined throughout the podcast and actually price it according to the market, then they will sell in a normal time. Back when I sold my house on my own, the market wasn't hot. It was getting hotter, but it wasn't hot. It wasn't like everybody that just stuck a sign in the yard got absolutely what they wanted. I still had my house under contract in under 30 days, which is a very quick time frame. And I've talked to plenty of people, even in just normal markets, who typically we'll see their house under contract in 30 to 45 days, which normally works for folks. So spend more time on the market. Again, you can argue that on the agent side. I've seen plenty of properties poorly marketed by agents and stay on the market for longer than they should. It's just the nature of the product of a house. Even if you put the best price out there and you put your best foot forward, sometimes properties don't sell for whatever reason. And the longer they sit on the market, whether it's a FSBO or a for sale or a listed property with an agent, if they sit on the market long enough, then people start wondering what's wrong with the house, and then it causes it's kind of a cascading effect. So they don't necessarily spend more time on the market than others if you look at them and consider everything being equal. So FISBOs lack representation. That's exactly right. That's the whole point of it. The whole point is to not have somebody represent you. And so, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you have nobody to call if you're doing a FISBO sale, if you're doing it for sale by owner. You have nobody to call. You know, you have title to call. You can call the buyer's lender. If you're going to be buying a new house, you can talk to your lender and ask them a question. There are people to talk to. Just because you don't have somebody sitting there collecting 6% doesn't mean you can't pick up the phone and talk to somebody that would help you through the home sale. That's just plain ridiculous. So that is, it's a fact in that you're not asking for representation from an agent, but it's false in that there are plenty of people for you to call. I mean, the information's out there. For crying out loud, ask Google. There's so many good pieces of information just if you ask general questions like, how could I do this with a contractor? How could I do this with a home inspection? That you can call a home inspection company and talk to them. They're going to answer your questions because they want to earn your business. They're not going to lie to you. So anyways, there's that one. Okay, inspections can be problematic. That's the nature of an inspection. No property is perfect, even brand new ones. So when a seller is reviewing a contract and they see that the offer is contingent upon the buyer doing a home inspection, that's normal. They should expect a buyer to do an inspection. And again, if they've disclosed everything they know to be true and accurate about the house, doesn't mean the inspector won't find something. But if you've lived in your house for a couple of years and you know that all the components work, right? You know the roof doesn't leak. You know you can turn the heater on and it works. If you have AC, you know you can turn the AC on and it works. You might have a plug here or a plug there that doesn't work that you've noticed over time. Okay, so just talk through it. You can deal with it. And then you have to just look into your state laws and talk to the inspector. So oftentimes what people don't do is they don't ask enough questions. So if a buyer does an inspection on your property, which they should, and they say, hey, look, we found 10 items that we'd like for you to either fix or give us money for, you just say, hey, let me see the inspection and circle the items you're talking about so I can read through it. And then you can read through it. And I'm here to tell you right now, an agent would do the exact same thing for you. So if you had an agent representing you on the home sale and the buyer did that, the agent would ask for the inspection if they're a good agent. And then they would go over it with you and go, okay, what do you want to do with this? So you're telling me that that is absolutely worth 6% for them to go, okay, read over this and tell me what you want to do. That's garbage. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Are there problems that come up in inspections? Absolutely. There are big ones. I've been part of inspections where we had to call in a structural engineer to tell us that everything was fine, even though it didn't look good, because an inspector goes, that doesn't look good. So you can expect that to happen. What do? Ask questions. Why doesn't it look good to you? Okay, let me see the report. I want to read through it. Then you can make a phone call. Hey, I got this inspection report. Can I email it over to you and you can tell me what you think of it? Yeah, we think it's okay. Oh, no, we think we should come out. That's going to cost you $100 for us to review it and tell you what's wrong with it. Okay, well, now you know. Now you know what you're dealing with. And it's better to know what you're dealing with than what you're not dealing with. And that happens through asking questions. So are inspections problematic? Sure they are. That's the truth. But you can work through it by having a simple conversation, talking to the home inspector, asking for the inspection report. Okay, so just pay attention to that stuff. Okay, another one. Marketing is limited. I call garbage on that as well. If the homeowner doesn't, so I say myth, if the homeowner doesn't even make an effort, which is sometimes the biggest problem. Sometimes homeowners just think that they can put one sign in the yard and go, hey, the house is for sale, and expect everybody to know about it. The reality is you do have to get your property out there, okay? You have to get it in front of as many people as possible. So here are your solutions to that. You can pay a flat fee MLS service. They're gonna be anywhere from $99 to $500. That's way cheaper than 6%, trust me, right? Just do the math, okay? So that gets it on the MLS. You don't have to pay 3%, pay 2% to a buyer's agent. They're still gonna bring you buyers. And even so, 95% of all buyers now are going online first to find properties before they ever start working with an agent. So if you put your property on the MLS, your local MLS, and you pay, let's say you pay the top end, let's say you pay $500, It's probably going to be on Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com as well. And buyers are looking on those sites. And if they want to look at your house, they'll come look at your house. It doesn't require an agent to make a phone call for somebody for you to find a buyer. Here's the other thing. You can put it on Craigslist. You can put it on your local news website. You can put it all over social media for free and have all your friends and family and coworkers share it. Plus, if you just learn a little bit about Facebook, and if you've never had experience running ads, you can have Facebook ads up and running on your property to the right people in 15 minutes. And you might spend, gosh, anywhere from $50 to $200 on social media ads to send buyers to your property that want to book tours. It's just the way it is. I've done it before. I've spent $50 on an ad for a particular client of mine in the past, and I had over 50 leads contact me about that particular property. Okay? You only need one buyer. So think about it. Marketing is actually not limited to a for sale owner. They just have to take a few steps. Okay, this one, hidden costs add up. This is a crack up to me, okay? Hidden costs add up. Why are you hiding costs if you're a real estate agent? Why aren't you telling anybody? So here's the thing that they're talking about. Signage, flyers, photography, MLS listings, home warranties, home inspections, pest inspections, credit reports, contracts, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's talk about these. Signage. I'm here to tell you, you can get some professionally made signs for under $100. Flyers will cost you $10, maybe. Photography can cost you. If you decide to go out and get a professional photographer, that could cost you $200 to $300. An MLS listing, like I said, anywhere from $99 to $500. If you had to get an attorney, every state's different. And so just look up whether or not you need a real estate attorney to close your transaction or not. They're trying to tell you in here that using an attorney is required in multiple states for FSBOs. You just have to close your property with the proper agency at the state level, meaning whether it's a title company or a real estate attorney. It's not like you have to add extra people to the transaction. You just need to be able to close. You just need to have a closing officer, and that is either a title officer or a real estate attorney. Just Google it. You can find out who that is. Okay. Home warranty. I actually would love for sell by owners to use home warranties to incentivize buyers to not bring an agent to the table, because I could spend maybe $2,000 on a 4-year home warranty. Think about the peace of mind for the buyer on that one. As a seller, most sellers will just buy a 1-year home warranty, because if it costs them $500 and they're paying real estate agent fees, that's another $500 out of their pocket. But guess what? If you don't have to pay agent fees, you could really incentivize the buyer with a 3 or 4 year home warranty. You can do that. It's totally within your right. If you were to sell a $300,000 house, and you had to pay the 6%, right? It's $9,000 on either side of the transaction. Well, you're already pocketing the $9,000 on your side for doing the deal yourself, okay? On the buyer's side, if they're not bringing an agent because you're incentivizing them with a 4-year home warranty, you're going to put an extra $7,000 in your pocket. I think it's worth it. I mean, you can do the math, okay? Home inspection. As a seller, you don't necessarily need to do a home inspection. Sometimes it's nice. Sometimes it's very easy to go, hey, look, I've already done a home inspection. Here's a report. Here's what they found. We already fixed all these items. I don't think you have to do it. It's just one of those nice things to do. Okay. Do you live in an area where you have termites or anything like that? If you do, hopefully you're aware of that before it actually happens and before you put the house up for sale. You're not going to have to buy a credit report, contracts. Listen, if you have an attorney review a contract, you can get a paralegal to do that. And like I said, fill in the blank contracts. If you just read over them, you don't have to use a real estate attorney. I've interviewed plenty of people who simply read through the contract, saw that it was in plain English, saw that it was fill in the blanks. And if they had a question, they just went to title and said, what do you think on this? And the title company helped them. I experienced the same thing when I sold my own home. So let's talk about the numbers again. Signage under $100, flyers maybe $10, photography. So up to $110, let's say. Just if we're rounding up photography, let's say you spent $300 on that. So now you're $410 MLS listing. Let's say you had to spend $500 on that. So now you're up to $910. Let's say you were able to find a buyer without a real estate agent, and you incentivize them by giving them a 4-year home warranty. So that's $2,000. So, but it helped secure the deal by doing that. So you had 910 plus 2000. So you're $2,910. Okay. And into all of that instead of $18,000. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? If we're talking about a $300,000 sale, mathematically, it makes a ton of sense. So just hidden costs. That's a bunch of baloney. You just have to think through it. And then time, can cost the seller money. Yeah, if you don't follow the right path, which is what this podcast is all about, again, if you don't prepare your home the right way, price it the right way, and market it the right way, then yeah, you're going to spend more time on the market. That's just the nature of what you're doing. But if you follow all of the right steps, then your time is going to be minimal. I'm saying to people, because this is what I've experienced, and now after interviewing several successful for sale by owners, it takes you about 5 to 10 hours of your own time to sell your property. So you can do the math. Now, I'll share with you the math for me. When I sold my first house on my own without any agents, I didn't have a listing agent and I didn't have a buyer's agent, and we sold the house. I put 10 hours worth of my personal time into selling the property. That was from marketing it to negotiating the contracts to closing the deal. It was 10 total hours. So I put the house on a website. I took the phone calls. I did the showings. So all told, it cost me 10 hours of my time. I saved $12,000. So do the math. That was $1,200 an hour. High price attorneys don't make that. That's an insane wage to earn. So if I put 10 hours into it and I made $1,200 an hour, don't you think your time is worth just as much? Listen, if it took me twice as long, if it took me 20 hours, that's still $600 an hour. Let's go even worse. Let's say it takes 40 hours of your time. It's still $300 an hour, right? Do you make $300 an hour? Okay, just think about that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying, the money is there to be put back into your pocket if you do this on your own. So when they say it costs the seller money, I don't buy it. When I was a licensed real estate agent, I could get my time involved in selling a house from the listing appointment all the way through the closing to between 5 and 7 hours of my time. So if you follow this podcast closely enough, I give you all of the steps in the right order, in order to spend the least amount of time possible and still maximize your dollar in your pocket. So having said all of that, listen, I'm not telling you it's not work, okay? There's work involved, but it's not as much work as they make it out to be. FSBO is a great option for a homeowner, despite what the industry would tell you. It's just, the more and more that agents try and get this stranglehold on, you're making a massive mistake, the more for sale owners understand that it's just not that difficult to get their property sold. And so if you just take the right steps, you'll be just fine on getting your property sold. So, as usual, I hope that helps you. And as always, I hope to see you on the next podcast.